In the desert oasis where stories ignite, Skip's little bar, a beacon of light. From the Coachella Valley stars to cool everyday Joes, join Patrick and Randy, let the stories flow. That big conversation, little bar, the magic spreads near and far. Backed by the McCallum Theater's grace, celebrate the voices that shape this place.
From the coveted corner booth in a little bar at the center of the Coachella Valley universe, welcome to another Big Conversation with Patrick Evans and Randy Florence, presented by the McCallum Theater. Visit McCallumTheater.org or reach the box office at 760-340-2787. Gentlemen.
Thank you very much, Howard. We are back here at the coveted corner booth of Skip Page's Little Bar. It's another edition of Big Conversations Little Bar. I'm your host, Patrick Evans, and my co-host, Mr. Randy Florence.
Your spiritual guru.
You are my spiritual guru.
It's almost like I've heard that before.
At the risk of repeating myself.
Yes.
How are you?
I'm good. I was starting to say at a previous conversation you and I were having. Last week we had two 13-year-old granddaughters and one of their friends in. And since it was 180 degrees out all week.
It wasn't 180. It was barely 110.
You don't like my idea about moving to Celsius so we could cool off by 30 degrees instantly.
No.
That's just a switch, right?
No, I want to switch to Kelvin.
Well, I don't want to hear about you and Kelvin.
It's a measurement of temperature.
Oh.
Absolute zero is measured at Kelvin, but that's okay. That was probably
great. That's great radio.
This isn't radio. It's a podcast, and it's about learning. We're educating people. So... You're not supposed to laugh at that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, let's see if our guest today ends up educated.
No, she's here to educate us. Andrea Carter is our guest.
And I'm sorry, you're going to feel dumber at the end of this.
Cool. So. Wait, before we get to Andrea.
Yes.
It's very important that we thank the McCallum Theater,
please.
Our presenting sponsor.
Yeah.
You know, they're getting ready for their next big season. They have a brand new CEO. Yvonne Bell, who has been the Senior Vice President of Development there, has been elevated to the CEO position, and she says that this is going to be the biggest season they've ever had. They're really looking forward to it. Get your tickets at McCallumTheater.org, and we're looking forward to having Yvonne here on the program soon.
I did hear from some people who attended the Lea Michele show there, and they just said it was one of the greatest they'd ever seen at McCallum.
So. Who was better, Lea or Michelle? No.
So today,
we're delighted to have a young lady who's been involved in our podcast before.
She's yes.
fed us one of our favorite guests, Patrick Warburton. This is Andrea Carter. And Andrea, thanks
Welcome.
For being here.
Thanks for having me, guys.
And I want to start right there with your involvement, because you're on the board for the Warburton Golf Tournament.
Correct.
So... amidst the partying, you guys still managed to pull off one of the greatest fundraisers in the Coachella Valley.
Well, it's actually St. Jude's top fundraiser in the country,
honest.
Yeah.
Bravo. Congratulations to you and the team.
Thank you. We just celebrated 15 years, and it's a pretty well-oiled machine at this point. We sell out our golf almost immediately with people who have been there in the past. They know not to miss it. And we have quite a few... returning guests and celebrities every year, and we sell out our evening music show, so it's a great event.
The songwriter event is one of my favorite things in the desert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People don't know what to expect when they go there, and they're like, oh, wow, this is so cool.
You put Alice Cooper in any room, and I'm going to be happy to be there.
Okay.
Yeah. How much did you raise this year?
Over $6 million. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we're up to about $35 million.
We don't charge our guests for appearances, do we?
No, but they might want to sponsor. might want to be a sponsor.
Yeah.
Big Conversation.
You'd still be well over $5
million. You give us a discount?
We'll give you a massive discount. Because we want to support the charity as well.
Of course. You do.
So you've been there since the inception.
Mm-hmm.
I remember talking to you when it was just kind of a fledgling idea. and I was like, wow, this sounds amazing. But it has grown into, well, you just said it, the biggest fundraiser for St. Jude in the country.
It is, yeah. I mean, I remember back in the days when Patrick Warburton was doing your makeup before going onto television. We have actual photos of that. Or no, you were doing his makeup.
I was doing
his makeup. Yeah, you were doing his makeup, yeah.
Yes. What?
You are full service.
He was coming on and then he was like, oh, I left my powder in the car. Do you have some powder? And I'm like, yeah, sure. And so then they got pictures of me putting on makeup, which I put on my resume right away. Yeah. Makeup artist to Patrick Warburton. Yeah.
I've been hearing some of his recent stand-up stuff.
Yeah, his tours, I'm Still Catholic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He leans into that, and it's really funny stuff.
Pretty blue on some of it, too.
Well, so we were just at the taping of his streaming special, which he is producing, and, you know, we'll work on selling it to Hulu or Netflix or whatever once it gets edited. And it was at the El Portal Theater over in North Hollywood, and it was, I mean, everybody was in stitches.
He's hilarious.
So funny. Yeah. And he actually really loves this because he's like, for the first time in my life, I'm doing what I want and not having other people say how to say it, and I'm writing my own material, so he's having a blast.
That's really cool. Mm-hmm. Nice to have a new career at that age.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, we appreciated you getting wrangling him here onto the podcast.
He had fun. Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about what goes on behind the scenes in planning the Warburton, because mm-hmm. it's become this juggernaut, and there was sort of a gap. I mean, the Amex is still the Amex, but the Frank Sinatra tournament went away. Mm-hmm. You guys really modernized the concept of a celebrity golf tournament.
That's true. I mean, and one of the things, you know, we do have a lot of returning artists and celebrities, especially at our jam session. People be like, oh, we've seen that show. There's never the same show twice.
Right.
And the thing is that a lot of those people, you know, from our favorite bands in the 70s and whatever, they're still touring and they're doing 80s cruises and things like that. So we get a little bit of a different mix every year, but they love to come back and they don't get paid. So it's been really, you know, important to say, hey, it sells out. People still have a great time, but you know, it does have a formula that works and we go with it.
What were some of the things early on that you were like, okay, don't do that again? Where did you learn?
Have Cheech and Chong as your stand up for Saturday night. All of us on the board were apologizing to everybody who was walking out. It was so crude and vulgar. It was beyond what you would have seen at any comedy show that you would expect.
Wow.
Crude and vulgar. It's kind of gone down in history as, you know, one of the worst things that's ever happened. Chong's wife, Tommy Chong's wife.
Yeah.
She was the one who took it to another level. And literally we were like, oh my gosh, we cannot get this.
So rule number one.
Yeah. Don't have them headline your comedy show. We wow. did do a comedy show in the early years and we just were like, it doesn't really work with St. Jude. So yeah. We did cut that.
Probably a good decision.
Well, I remember
they'll be on the show here next week.
Well, not Tommy just Chong's wife, not that filthy lady.
That sounds like the one that sounds edgy.
So it does sound. One year at the Sinatra, Ron White.
I love Ron White.
Me too. He's one of my favorite comedians, and you know, I've taken my wife to see him, and she thinks it's funny. There were a couple of moments where I thought, is she going to laugh at this? Because I think it's hilarious. But he came out and he did not a long set. And he had been told there were a couple of words he couldn't say. After about 5 minutes, he said them. Yeah. And Barbara Sinatra actually got up and left the room.
Oh, wow.
like that's a bad sign.
Yeah. I
remember, was oddly not invited back.
No. I remember going when I was ushering at the McCallum. They had the Book of Mormon. And a number of people walked out at the end of the first half of that. And they were saying to me as the usher, I can't believe what that was like. And I go, you've heard of this show, haven't you?
I mean, yeah.
you knew what was going to happen
you
here.
Bought a ticket.
You know
could
who
Google
wrote
it.
The show? The South Park guys, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, does anybody really tell Ron White what to say?
No, you can't.
Or Cheech and Chong for
that's
that.
True, that's
yeah.
true.
So tell me about early on when you thought, okay, this is it. This
well,
is going to last.
We actually didn't have our jam session the first year. And
it was just the golf tournament?
It was just the golf. Then we added the jam. Then we added the songwriter's night. So we could see along the way the potential for making it just a big party with a purpose weekend.
Yeah.
And once, you know, it started to really take off, you know, we were selling more tickets. And, you know, I had some hard conversations with some of my media friends who were like, hey, can I get on the media list? And I'm like, we used to have a media list, but now because of the fire marshal, we can only fit so many bodies into the Marriott Ballroom. And so for every media ticket I give away, we can't sell a ticket to help the kids of St. Jude. So I very unapologetically said, I hope you enjoy those days, but they are over now.
That doesn't exclude podcast hosts.
It does, unfortunately. Oh. But we still love you.
Both of us?
Well.
This sounds like you're going.
Luckily, the TV station's been pretty involved.
They've been
and
huge,
so,
huge.
There are, look, on the Friday of the war, and often the Thursday as well, our newsroom is a ghost town.
It is. I hear that all the time.
You can fire a cannon through that joint.
Everybody takes it off. Yep.
Everybody goes.
Yeah.
I mean, White's there, Karen Devine, Peter takes. I'm like, if you want to anchor the news, that's the weekend
that's
you
chance.
Go to my news.
Seriously?
Say, listen, I know no one's available, but I am.
You're not going to like the stories, but I'd love to do it.
That's, oh, yeah. That's, no, you don't get to produce the newscast, but you could sit and anchor it.
There's your shot. So, there's your chance.
Yeah, everybody loves
it. No, the last time you were going to put me on air like a host, you almost got fired, so.
That is true. But I've recently had you on Eye of the Desert, I think.
Yeah,
you
but,
should remember
but not,
that.
Not as an interviewer.
No, as an interviewee.
That's a game you don't want to go into, I don't think.
No, we were good. This is a famous story now.
Okay.
He did almost get me fired. He was the chairman of the Chamber of Commerce. And he came on Eye in the Desert, and we were joking around. He's like, oh, man, your job is so cool and so fun. I said, yeah, so is yours. We should swap jobs.
Oh, no.
Like, you do the interviews. When you interview me on Eye in the Desert, and I'll do a ribbon cutting. It seems innocuous enough.
It does.
But the ribbon cutting he picked was the biggest pot retailer on the planet.
No.
And they, you know, I said, okay. And then they put out like a thing, you know, like a save the date, Patrick Evans.
Well, it was that night.
No, it was a couple of days before.
Oh, okay.
And Jerry.
Sorry,
Upham,
I was so high.
RGM,
during that episode.
You were so high. It was a week beforehand. It was the save the date. And Jerry Upham got the email blast.
And he's like,
and he called me right away. He goes, no, you're not doing that ribbon cutting.
And wasn't that at the same facility?
Yes,
that
it was yes. the old KESQ
studios.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I thought it works out perfect because there had been so much pot in that building already. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. That is
all right. I want to get back to Andrea.
Let's do that. Absolutely. So you were born and raised on a farm in Minnesota.
Small town Minnesota.
Just a farm girl from Minnesota.
Yeah. I mean, I do feel like I've had a pretty interesting life considering that I grew up in a town of 500 people. I had 26 kids in my graduating class.
What?
No stoplights. Yeah. Mm-hmm. 26 kids. I went to school every single year with those 26 kids. And when we graduated, it was like, hope I never see you again. No offense, but we spent way too much time together.
I've never been back to a reunion or anything like that.
Yeah.
Well, have you?
I went to an all-school reunion. It wasn't worth it to come back for the 26th. But hey, I knew everybody in the school, so if everybody's coming, I'll go. So yeah, I mean, it was a very small town, dealt with the winters and all that. And
how did the family get there?
To that town?
That small town,
basically,
that farm.
Wagon train.
Yeah, pretty much. It's that, you know, ancestral 1923, you know, because their parents and their parents before and their parents before settled.
You developed a love of singing early on.
Mm-hmm.
You sang in high school, right? You were in the choir.
I did. My mom was a music teacher, so she always had me singing, yeah.
And you eventually got involved with the Fred Waring Singers.
I did. The Fred Waring's U.S. Chorus. I'm one of the few people in the Coachella Valley who actually knows who Fred Waring is, and it's not just a road. You know?
You and John Stanley King.
That's who. I was trying to remember who we had on the travel.
Yeah, John toured with them for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Well, what mine was a special that we recorded for PBS. So it wasn't the Pennsylvanians, but it was this U.S. course. And so he brought in people from all the different states, and I represented Minnesota. And then we were all together. We stayed in the dorms at Penn State. We practiced singing and dancing, you know, like crazy. And then we did this show, and they had an audience, and it did appear on PBS around the country. So
that's very cool.
It was really fun.
You've had about 25, 30 careers since you got out here. Was that a point, at that point, were you thinking, this is going to be it? I'm going to be in music and perform the rest of my life?
I never, ever wanted to be in music. No. I always wanted to do it for fun. It's way too much pressure to try to make it, or whatever they call it when you try to have it be your living. So I always wanted to do it for fun, and that's pretty much what I did. I even sang with Patrick once.
We did, and I was reading your notes, and you're right. I think it was after the Steve Chase.
Yeah.
We were at Melvin's. Uh-huh. And
that had to be pretty cool. Was Mike playing? Michael
Healy was playing, yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it was very memorable.
It was very memorable.
And
well, you remember it. I vaguely remember it.
Hey, I checked it off my bucket list. Are you kidding me? I was like, I got to sing with Patrick Evans. Oh.
Well, this all culminated last year here in the Valley with you winning a pretty important competition in town.
I did. Singing with the Desert Stars. I pulled it off, I guess. I mean, I don't sing a whole lot anymore. I mean, I used to get pulled up with the nest a lot. But things have changed over there, so...
Yeah, it's a little different vibe these days.
It's a little different,
days. But talk about singing with the Desert Stars, because they did that's Desert Ensemble Theater Works that was doing that as a fundraiser, and sadly, they're closing up shop. But this was one of their signature fundraisers. Mm-hmm. They sold it out the first year. Mm-hmm. I got to be a coach in year one.
Oh, cool.
But who was your coach? And tell us about what you sang and winning that competition.
Barbara was my coach.
Kerr.
Barbara Kerr was my coach. She's lovely. I just adore her.
Previous guest on the podcast. Guest,
yeah. Yes.
So I actually chose to sing Home from the Wiz for a few reasons. One, I won the talent competition in a pageant with that song years ago. And two, with the whole resurgence of... Now, The Wiz is a different show than Wicked, obviously. But everybody...
Offshoot of that,
everything kind of becomes new again. And everybody starts talking about The Wizard of Oz and The Wiz and everything. And so it kind of came full circle. And it's a belty song. And I'm kind of a belty kind of gal. So that was easy for me to pick.
How did you feel when the lights went on at the actual performance?
Well, to be honest with you, the keyboard crashed in the middle of my song.
What?
Yeah.
I wasn't able to attend. I didn't hear about that.
I was the last contestant to go. And literally, I'm like starting to build it up, and all of a sudden, and the entire thing goes out.
So you were a cappella the
second
half of this?
Well, everybody kind of stopped from it. It was buzzing. I couldn't have even sang over that. It was like zzzz. And the audience is all like,
and that wasn't you.
It wasn't me. And everyone was like, oh my gosh. So he had to reboot it. And so we're all standing there going, oh. Okay. And then I started not from the beginning, a little ways in, but it made for some drama for the evening.
Well, the fact that you survived that and didn't fall off the stage was probably saying a lot.
I did not need that.
I think I probably would have walked off at that point and said, thank you, everybody.
Yeah, it doesn't help the nerves at all to have your accompaniment go out.
You've performed on that very stage, Randy. I've seen you in a play there.
Which was that at Palm Canyon?
No, it was at the Palm Springs Cultural Center.
Oh, that's what I meant. You think I know the one place I've performed.
Was it only one place?
I've done two there, and then, the huge movie career.
Well, that's true. The movie. I mean, you got to start giving out autographs.
I was certain my part was going to get cut out of that movie. No. I was just certain of it.
No.
I'm hearing they're planning a sequel entirely around your character. That is what I've heard.
But not starring me, interestingly enough.
No, they're not. They can't recast that.
Did you mean that he got cut out of it, or just the nose hair?
Wow.
Nose hair. Oh, well, that's because...
The angle is right up your
nose. I told him the first thing I saw when my face showed up on the 40-foot screen was nose hair.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah. Funny enough, Patrick Warburton, he actually, there was a film, one of Seth MacFarlane's films, it might have been Ted, where the description of the character was a Patrick Warburton type character. So, maybe they're going for Randy Houston type character.
Yeah,
and you can audition and see if you get it.
I've got no more calls. So.
Oh, no, your phone's going to ring. So I just saw that you and your husband have been married 30 years.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
And 25 of those have been spent here in California. But you were a kid. I mean, you were 21.
Yep. So, yeah, and we both, couldn't wait to get out of Minnesota. We hated the winters and stuff like that. But yeah, it's 30 years is a long time.
Wow. But what made you guys, how did you pick California? What drew you out west?
So I used to travel quite a bit in some of my previous jobs, and I looked up a childhood friend out here. It was February, and she lives on Hovely. She has a great view of the mountains. She put umbrellas in our drinks, and I went to visit her, and I just called my husband right after, and I said, we have to move here. And he's like, well, you don't have to ask me twice. So about a year later, I started looking for jobs, and that's when Scott Kreiner hired me. So,
how much time had you spent in a place that was slightly different in weather?
I had only visited a few times. Yeah. But that, you know, I sang in
and
my...
were you smart enough not to come during the summer?
Well, no. I don't mind the summers, honestly, because the winters,
oh,
I've,
I don't
lived
either.
Through, the winters the I've lived through, I would take a summer here before a winter there anytime. But,
true.
You know, I was saying, and I was there was a touring choir with my college that I was able to make. And so we did a West Coast tour. We did the Eastern Bloc of Europe, and we traveled all around.
You have been to Vilnius.
Yes, that's how I connected with your wife.
That's right.
It's really cool. Not a lot of people have been to Vilnius. So.
No, it's. I think it's gaining more traction.
Yeah, people you mentioned something on the news one day, and I was like, oh my gosh, like somebody I can connect with about Vilnius, Lithuania. So, but we did do a West Coast tour, and it wasn't until after I moved here that I remembered we actually had done a stop at the Presbyterian Church where Gerald Ford's funeral was or whatever. And so I moved here, and all of a sudden I had this deja vu, and I was like, oh my gosh, I had been here as part of my college, but I never connected it till after I moved here.
And what was the first thing you got involved in when you got here?
Just working, you know, and starting to get involved in the community. I mean, obviously after 25 years, I've done a lot here, but like you just kind of... get started. Scott was a great person to work for. You know Scott.
Yeah, when I moved here 23 years ago, Kiner's was the big firm.
It was, yeah. You know. Yeah, I was fortunate to work for him for 8 years, and he made me cry when I told him I was leaving to start my own business, but we've stayed friends, and he always wished me the best, and was always very supportive of my family. You know, he had let me work from home 2 days a week. At a time when
nobody
did
was
that,
working from home.
Because I had my babies right in a row, bang, bang, 14 months. And so, and some of the staff would go and complain, and he'd like, she's my top biller. Get out of my office. I don't care what
when
she
you're
does.
Making that much money, you come yeah, back and
he,
talk
he,
to me.
He that's was right. like, she's producing, so she can do that. But it was kind of crazy.
She's producing and reproducing.
But hey,
thank you. We are here all week. That's the
well
gin
played.
Spritzer talking.
Well played.
I can't wait for the second one.
I'm glad they didn't put the flowers in yours. I don't know what would have happened.
Well, Randy would be sitting closer.
Were you as involved, was the family as involved in things like philanthropy and working with those kind of organizations back in Minnesota? Or did this become something that you just kind of noticed in this town?
Yeah. I really got pulled in this community, realizing that that's such an important part of being involved in giving back here. I mean, this has a very small town feel. I should say that after I graduated from college, my first 5 years were spent working in the Twin Cities area in Minneapolis, St. Paul. And so I worked for big companies.
Yeah.
And I traveled all over the place, and I did that. So, you know, I was part of like IABC. I was on their board for a bit, which is like the International Association of Business Communicators, whatever. But then I came here, and I was like, this is part of the culture here. And there were so many great nonprofits I was going to their events and learning about, and I was like, this feels good.
Did you get over-involved early on? I know when I moved to town, I signed up for so many things, like... finally had the
I
back
got involved
off.
In stuff that I didn't really realize at the time. Like I was very young when I joined the board of Desert Arc. At the time, it was called Foundation of for the Retarded of the Desert, which of course we all wanted to get rid of the name. It was retarded.
You wanted to take desert out
yeah,
of there.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Retarded was a clinical word, you
Please
know, at one point.
Send
but,
your
yeah.
notes, cards, and letters to Randy Florence.
Well, wait a minute. We had one guest who spent half the episode apologizing and saying the word over and over and over. Who was that? No, it wasn't Danny Bonaducci.
Who was it?
I don't know. I'll figure it out.
I don't remember.
But at the time, we had an executive director.
Stephen Rosenbaum.
He found it. He got it.
I found it.
But yeah, it was at a time where the executive director was doing some bad things. We had to let him go. You know, Chris Murphy. You probably remember Christine Murphy. She was mayor of Rancho Mirage for several years.
Oh, yeah.
She was the board chair, and we actually hired Richard Blocko, who was there for many, many years, and we changed the name. So
yeah, he just retired.
Yeah, yeah, he did.
What did his
Great
name
guy.
Become? Oh, it wasn't his name
yeah,
he changed.
No name changes for Richard, I don't think. Sorry. But and he was so great for the organization. But at the time, I was very, very young, and I didn't understand. Nobody told me about fiduciary responsibility. And, I mean, the executive director, we had to let go, sued us all personally. I'm sitting in a deposition going,
wow.
Oh, my gosh. I'm like,
so
I have
glad I got involved
babies
with
at
this.
Home, and I'm like 33 years old. Like, what did I do? But, you know, that which does not kill you makes you stronger, and I fully believe that. So,
yeah. One of the first questions I ask when I'm asked to do board work is, tell me about your board insurance. Really important.
Your E&O.
Yes.
Directors and officers.
Yes.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah, you know, before we jump into all the celebrities, and I know you have stories, We want to get to those stories, but we have to take a quick break to hear from our good friends at the McCallum Theater, our presenting sponsor. Remember, you can go to McCallumTheater.org, gearing up for the 25-26 season.
At the McCallum Theater, we believe in placing arts at the heart of learning. Since 97, our education department has inspired nearly 1 million students and community members through dynamic performances and immersive arts education programs. From the Palm Desert Choreography Festival to our Open Call Talent Project, we provide powerful platforms for emerging artists. Experience how the arts contribute to personal growth and enlightened citizenship. Your entertainment, your theater, the McCallum Theater. Learn more at McCallumTheater.org.
We are here with Andrea Carter, speaking of singers. But now you, let's see, now you worked with Sharon Stone.
I did.
How was
that? That is a crazy story. So
I'm not allowed to say this, but someone I might or might not be married to, might or might not be attorney, and might or might not have had her as a client.
Oh, well, so, I happen to know who that is. So he was with her at the time.
Oh, no. We're thinking of different people.
Okay, we are. Okay. So, so because I was working at the film festival and people knew that I could handle celebrities, the biggest thing when you're a celebrity handler, and I was hired as a celebrity handler, is you got to be on it and you got to be cool and you can't take pictures and you can't be a fan and you can't do all these things, because all my friends from Minnesota will be like, did you get a picture? And I'm like, well, no. And that's why they hired me back. Like, you know, you got to be professional, yeah, right? So I got, you know, reached out about this gig with Sharon Stone, and I was like, oh, I heard she's really difficult. I don't know about this. So we went out to the Bermuda Dunes airport and met her on the tarmac. It was me and her limo driver, and she had, you know, a little bit of an entourage. So the plane comes in, and we're like half a football field away from the plane when they come in with the car. And she's the first one on the plane, and she saunters out, and she's like, could you get any closer? And me and the limo driver are like, she's like, I'm kidding. And I'm like,
oh my God.
Like, is this the kind of night I'm about to have?
I'm so sorry.
But actually the rest of the night was pretty good. I mean, there was no real hiccups, but that was a pretty big jolt at the beginning of the night. I thought, oh boy.
But celebrity handler. So, mm-hmm. So talk about that. Mm-hmm. What were you doing for Sharon?
Making sure that she is where she needs to be.
I'm sorry, just because I don't know how this works. Every town they go into, there's a celebrity handler.
It depends on the event. It depends on a lot of things. Some of them have assistants, but they don't want to pay their assistants to go. And so there'll be like somebody from the event needs to just make sure.
Got it.
Like they're not going to, she's not going to come 30 minutes early to make sure she's ready for a cue. Same thing with Joan Rivers when I worked at the Steve Chase Humanitarian Awards.
How was that?
Oh my gosh. So she's actually a hardworking woman, very lovely, but she arrives for rehearsal and she's doing her thing and she's doing her monologue and they got it up on the teleprompter and she's like having to recognize all these people and sponsors her and she's like, da da da. She's like, oh my God, nobody cares. We really need
and you heard all the checks going away.
Well, then she sees her face on the jumbotron on each side and she goes, back it up. Back that camera up. No, you're not zooming in on me. And we're just all like, oh my gosh, this is just so wild. But I actually worked with her. I was the person who told her that Whitney Houston had died, because that happened the night of Steve Chase Humanitarian Awards. And because everybody was talking about it and sensitive and everything, I was like, you just need to know this happened. And she was like, oh, drugs. I knew it, you know. But she was lovely in the sense that she would always come. This is why you have handlers. They tell you right when you need to be somewhere, and then they let you go. And so you don't have to think, someone's got me. Someone's going to tell me where to be, and then they're going to just make sure I can go away. So that's basically what that job entails. But she would come early. She would always come before she was supposed to. And she had a painful back. Like, she had a lot of pain in her back. I could see her fidgeting and whatever, but I'd say, you know, Miss Rivers, you don't need to be here yet. She's like, that's okay. I want to be ready. And so she actually was very lovely.
Good work.
And a hard worker. Yeah.
How did you start with the film festival?
You know, I think, if I remember, because I was working for Kiner at the time, and somebody at the festival came to Kiner and said, do you have any employees? Because there were a couple other coworkers of mine at Kiner Communications that went with me. But they didn't get hired back, but I got hired back, and I worked it for 12 years.
That's because you knew not to take pictures and ask for autographs and
stuff
like
that. Yeah, it's a it's one of those jobs where it's just, you know, you're not there to be a fan. And I mean, there have been some cool things I was able to do, like protect Kate Blanchett from an onslaught of people trying to take selfies with her. And she just looked at me and she was like, I hate selfies. I'm like, don't worry, I won't let them take any selfies. But the people were trying to hand me their camera while I'd be taking her to the bathroom, right? And they'd be like, here, will you take a picture? No, she needs to be backstage and I'm working and go away. Now, there's a time for that, and that's the red carpet where Patrick's at and where you can take pictures and that kind of thing. But people would follow them to the bathroom. And
my wife followed Julianne Moore into the bathroom. But I think that was more because we were sitting at the table next to Harvey Weinstein, and she just wanted to leave.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Yikes. Boy, wow. That's a memory.
That is. So who are some of your favorites, and what are some of your favorites, and do you have off-color stories you can tell us? Come on.
Yes.
Good. All right. Excellent. Oh.
It's been so long now.
Make them up.
And I guarantee you.
I wouldn't make them up.
That celebrity, whoever it may be, whoever they may be, they're not listening to the podcast, so you can tell anything you want.
Well, and I can also promise you that the stories I would tell, based on what you've heard about them, a million people have told these stories.
So, oh, okay, good.
I mean, what you hear is probably true. I'm just saying that.
Worst celebrities that you worked with.
Charlize Theron.
Really?
Horrible.
Don't say
and
that.
And two different occasions. She was out here twice.
And she was terrible both times.
She was very rude. And so the second time she was here, and I had to go get her for backstage. And so I said, you know, Miss Theron, they're ready for you backstage. And she's like, I just got my food. I'm not going to leave until I'm eating. So I get on the headset. I'm like, okay. So she's not coming. She needs to eat. And if you look at her, you're like, but do you eat? Like, I don't know.
That's right.
You really want to eat?
I had a scallop today.
Right. I'm like, we literally had to go to the orchestra for a break that was not planned in the show so she could have a couple bites of her meal. And then she was ready to go back. So both times she was just not pleasant.
Was that a surprise to you?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's certain things you're like, I didn't want to know that.
Yeah,
because, you know, so we often have a very good opinion of these folks. And
for
then you
sure.
meet them. Most of the time when I interview celebrities on the red carpet, they kind of meet or exceed my expectations.
Right.
Kieran McCulkin.
He did neither of those. So that's my fault.
Mostly they know they're there for that.
Right.
Right.
And so, yeah.
Managers are peons.
So, wow. She was... what else? Give us another good story.
Okay. So, another cool story I had was there was a time when Helen Hunt was there and Diane Lane. And so, I'm backstage and Diane Lane comes up to me and she says, I see Helen Hunt is here. Do you know where she's sitting? And I said, yeah, I have the table sitting. Right here. And she's like, okay, just a minute. And she like writes her a note and she handed it to me and I got to bring it to Helen Hunt from Diane Lane.
Very
that
cool.
That was really fun.
Did you read it?
I did look at it. But at that time I was working, so I kind of went, okay, yeah. Whatever. But it was kind of like lovely to see you, call me, type stuff. So. But that was really
was
cool to be
was,
in that moment.
I can't believe you beat me for that part.
No, I know, nothing too juicy.
I'm sorry, I won't be in the same room with Diane Lane.
That's right.
Right. No, I was impressed, though, that she just like gave it to me and said, here, go bring this to Helen Hunt. And I was like, okay, I'll do that. You know,
she
John
said, go to Helen Hunt, which is it's an awkward command.
Oh, there's a lot of that.
I know. That's why this works.
Yes.
Let's be honest.
It's true.
John Travolta was the best.
Yeah.
I mean, he was just my favorite because when I was walking him backstage, and a lot of times I didn't converse with them. Sometimes I would because if it was a really long walk. It just felt weird. But I had said to him, he was there for Hairspray.
Oh, how cool. I love that movie.
And so I said, oh my gosh, you made the best Edna Turnblad. And he turned to me and it was like he had never gotten a compliment in his life. And he was like, oh my gosh, thank you so much for saying that. And he was so sincere and from his heart. And I had gotten to be friends with an ET producer backstage. She and I worked together for years. Her name is Rory. And she did all the, you know, she worked with Mary Hart, but she did all the stuff backstage. And I was telling her about it. And she's like, you know what? John remembers what it was like when the fans weren't there. And he's a different person now. Like, he appreciates everything differently.
That's really good to hear. He went through a few years there where we were kind of worried whether he was losing
it or not. Yeah, if he was
going to
have a resurgence or not.
Yeah.
So my best story, though, I've saved that one for you. maybe Patrick's heard about it, too. I don't know. So it was Mariah Carey, the person everybody loves to hate. And she earns every bit of it. So she shows up, and she's going to be recognized for the movie Perfect that year. And this is her chance to like break through kind of to acting, right? Because she was got a lot of, you know, kudos for that. So she shows up at the red carpet and she's already like smashed. And so we have the headsets on, so we're all talking about what's going on the headset. And I hear someone say, Mariah Carey has requested a bottle of Chardonnay backstage. And I was like, oh, man, this is going to be good. So, and of course, whatever the celebrities want, like, you always do it. Like, yep. There's, because they want them to come back. They want them to have a good experience. So, like, if they ask for anything and they tell you, it doesn't matter what, like, I mean, no one said if they ask for cocaine, go find it for them.
Hookers?
Yeah. No one's, not cocaine. That either. But
and cocaine. Well, they go together.
Yeah.
You really can't have one without
If Sean Penn wants... I don't know, really? Then let's dive into that.
No, I literally don't know.
I'm not sure. You're backing off of it.
Yeah.
All right.
I did get married
in 1981, so... Anyway, go ahead.
You know, I mean, if Sean Penn wants to go to the loading dock, even though no one's allowed back there to have a smoke before he goes on stage, we take him out there, and that's what he did. I mean, Jamie Foxx, when he was there, his security guard pulls me aside before he's about to go on stage. Or not before, right before. But during the, he saw I had a headset. He's like, you know, you're going to be getting him? And I said, yeah. And he's like, okay, well, look, Jamie's going to have to go to the bathroom before he goes up, so you make sure to allow extra time for Jamie to go to the bathroom. Okay. So, took him to the bathroom, got up there. He went on stage. He was flying. Oh, my gosh. I was like, oh, no, I know. He had to go to the bathroom.
So, he didn't have to use the bathroom. He just needed to go to the bathroom.
He needed to go to the bathroom because he was, like, just crazy on the
stage. But was he funny? Was he?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, he definitely wanted to do something that got him over the top, and he did. But back to Mariah Carey. So anyway, so she's got a bigger entourage than anybody I've ever seen there. I mean, ridiculous entourage, like just surrounding her. And so one of her people comes up to me because I got the table list and the clipboard, right? I know where everybody sits. And she's like, excuse me, Miss Carey would like to know where Clint Eastwood is sitting. And I'm looking at her and I look at Mariah and I'm like, sure. So I'm like, right here, right next to Morgan Freeman. So she saunters over. She just falls in between the two of them talking to him. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. I'm like, this is your chance to actually be in more movies. I'm like, oh, it's so bad.
Probably not the right person to
probably
fall on top
not.
Of is Clint Eastwood.
Yeah. Yeah. So then she goes on stage, and she cannot get through it. Like, she's mumbling and bubbling, and she's like, you'll have to excuse me. I'm a little bit. And somebody else, like, blitzed or something. She's like, yeah. Well,
I'm diabetic.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. No, I mean, and so she was, all the talk shows the next day were roasting her, and it actually put the film festival on the map. They
nice.
Loved the publicity. But so the Globes were a couple days later, and she went. She was on her best behavior there.
Was that the worst anybody was up on stage since you've been there?
Yeah, definitely. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. And then a few years later, she had had her little flub of the lyrics on New Year's Eve, right? So we were all working like the next day at this event. And I work with, there are several people they hire that are professional stage managers for that event, like work for Disney and stuff like that. So we were all talking about it. They've all worked with her multiple times and they were so happy. They're like, couldn't have happened to a better woman. Like truly her bad reputation, like it exceeds.
It's totally, totally deserved.
It is totally deserved. Everywhere she goes, like, she burns bridges. She doesn't care. She is the true definition of a diva.
Are you still to the point where meeting somebody like that gives you a little bit of a thrill? Or have you been doing it long enough that...
I'm probably like Patrick now, right?
Yeah.
I mean, early on, you know, yes, because I was from a small town in Minnesota, and it was like Hollywood felt like so far away. But you do it enough times, and it's like they're just another person. It's funny, the people who get me excited, though, like, for example, like when I first met Tristan Rogers, who, you know, I've spent a lot of time with now.
Scorpio.
I've gotten to know him and his wife, and he actually came to a little celebrity fundraiser for my daughter's school, and it was great. But the difference is I grew up with him every single day.
Yeah.
So it's the people that you feel like kind of, you know, because they were part of your life, like on a regular basis. When you meet them, you're like, oh my gosh, like I literally grew up with you, you know, that's special.
Did that
feel like.
Way with Patrick?
Yeah.
You look at him
I
that
still
way
grew up with him every single day.
I want to talk to you about something very personal.
Oh.
Because.
Do I need to be here?
Yeah. You don't need
awkward.
To be here, Randy. You can go now. Thank you. You've been of great service to us today.
People.
Now, let's talk about you being adopted.
Okay.
And I bring that up because I was.
I don't think I know that.
I don't think you know that.
Wow.
Is there a story coming here? Did you run a...
Are you open about it?
Oh, my gosh. 23andMe scores again.
Being revealed right now.
That's right. No, there's no story about that. I'm just... But you have... I have not... I don't know who my birth parents... It was a closed adoption.
Yep, so
it was
mine.
In the 60s. Mm-hmm. But you are close with your... You have a very unique...
I do.
...adoption situation. Your biological parents... Mm-hmm. Gave you up for adoption, but then got married, which that
never happens. Right.
And they went on to have three boys.
Yeah, so I have three full-blooded brothers.
And they're full-blooded brothers. So how did you reconnect with your birth family?
Well,
walk us through that experience.
Sure. So, because people
and were there siblings on the adopted in the adopted family?
I did grow up with a sister who's 6 years younger than me.
Okay.
Who was also adopted. But so since you, Patrick, are familiar, obviously, being in the same position as me. So I never had a desire to find my birth family. Like, my parents were great, had a great life. Sounds like you probably feel the same way.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. And I never was going to find them. So with a closed adoption, mine was also closed. And I'm actually a kind of a strong proponent of closed adoptions because I feel like, you know, you got to kind of let the child grow up in their situation without, like, this is your birth parent. Like, while they're growing up, like, whatever, when they grow up. But I,
well, I think, you know, especially the younger you are, the more confusing that would
be. That's what I'm saying, yeah. So yeah. I do like the idea. They don't really exist anymore, but I liked the idea of them. So I'm driving to L.A. for a meeting once about, you know, 15 years ago or 12 years ago, and I get this call, and this woman is like, you know, my name is such and such, and I'm with Lutheran Social Services. And I'm like, oh my gosh, there's only one reason this woman would call me. And she's like, are you at a place you could talk? I'm like, let me pull over. So she's like, I have a letter here from your birth mom. And she's like, I want to know if I can send it to you. And I said, you can send it to me. That's fine. So I got the letter and I read it and I found out about my brothers and she just gave her name. But then I looked up, you know, online. There was enough of the internet back then where I could figure out who they were through obituaries of my, you know, maternal grandparents and stuff. So I found one of my brothers on Facebook. I didn't reach out to him, but he popped up when I typed his name in. And I was like, wow, that's so weird. And he kind of looked like some of my pictures when I was a kid. So I was telling my friend, I'm like, you got to see this. She's like, this is my friend from Minnesota. I'm back visiting. And so she's like, well, look him up in my account. Or her Facebook account was open. She's like, well, type his name in so I can see his profile picture. Well, we type his name in and she has a mutual friend with my brother. And she's like, oh, my friend Stacy knows him. And I'm like, oh my gosh. This is like a month after I got the letter. Because while it was cool, I was like, I don't know if I want to do this. I'm good. This is, I love the idea of having brothers, but I'm happy with my parents. I don't want to upset them, like, for being interested. I didn't respond for a month, not knowing, you know, do they need a kidney? Like, I don't know why they're reaching out now. So she talked to her friend. She contacted me like a week or two later. Her friend had sat next to my brother at work, had done mortgages for all my family. She knew my entire family. So I at least got that third party, they're not ex-murderers thing. So I was like, okay. So then we corresponded with letters and we met the following Christmas. By the way, my birth parents did get divorced. So they weren't still together and all that. But so I met my birth parents, weird. My brothers, it was like we had known each other our entire life. Like, loved them so much. I'm super close to them to this day. Birth parents, not so much. My birth mother got a little territorial. She was thinking she needed to hear from me on Mother's Day and stuff. I'm like, yeah, I got a mom. I get why you think of me as your daughter. Mm-hmm. But she overstepped several boundaries. And my brothers were super protective of me because she wasn't the best mom to them either. She left them a few years. They call her by her first name, honestly.
Ooh.
So we kind of had that bond a little bit. You know what I mean? It wasn't like they were this happy family and I was the missing link and all that type of thing. So now, like, you know, my brothers and I are close, but I don't really talk to my birth parents. And that's good, you know.
Your adoptive parents knew that you connected with your birth parents.
Yeah.
Though.
Yeah. It wasn't easy at first.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, my mom was always like kind of hoping that that would happen, but they fell in love with my brothers. My brothers fell in love with my parents. My brothers would say to my parents, hey, John and Owen, can you adopt us too? So it actually was like, it turned out as a pretty good situation overall. But yeah, I don't have any contact with the parents anymore.
My mom was a bit of a wild child, and we'd heard rumors for years that there might have been a couple of other kids out of there, and we did find two of them. Mm. And the first one,
we found two of them like there are a lot more.
There might be.
We've only found two of them. The last thing my dad told me about my mom is she was a wild child, Randy. And this was in the 50s, you know, and her parents were very conservative. So mm-hmm. the first child she had at 15 mm-hmm. never even came out of the hospital, went right into adoption. And one of my sisters found him at one point. And I was the same way. I was like, mm-hmm. nah, yeah, mm-hmm. I was kind of happy being the oldest kid,
yeah.
being the oldest son.
Yeah.
But then some years, maybe 2018, we found another one.
Wow.
Who turned out to be full-blooded sister of one of my half-sisters. I'll put out a graph later.
That'd be great.
And family tree, please.
And so I was, she flew in. I was able to introduce the two of them, one of the most touching moments I've ever seen.
Yeah.
But it was the same thing. Mm-hmm. This sister and I, it was like we'd known each other our entire lives. We talk all the time now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But well, it was very, very interesting on the second time I was more open to meeting.
Well, what I explain to people is, if you've ever seen the movie Sliding Doors with Gwyneth Paltrow, so she got to see her life down one way, and then she slid the door or the other. If one decision would have been made in her life was this way. Well, I got to actually see, like, my birth parents' hometown was, you know, was not great. My birth mother was, to be honest, on a bar stool most of her life. Like, I would have never had the opportunities that I had. And she kept saying after I met her, like, oh, I should have kept you, whatever. And I would say, look, I mean this in the most respectful way. Thank you for making this
Thank
decision.
Thank God you didn't.
Like, I had the best life. My parents gave me every opportunity. And I went, I remember one time the whole family wanted to meet me. We met at the town bar or whatever. And I'm looking at this bar stool in the bar, and I'm like, that's where I would have been my entire life if she would have kept me. So I actually got to experience that and talk about appreciation even more so of your life, you know. And you probably have a very similar story, Patrick, where, like, look at all you've done in your life.
I've never, you know, I don't even know if my birth parents are still alive.
Right.
I have no idea.
But they probably made the best choice for
there's
you.
There's no doubt about that. I mean, well, yeah. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they were super wealthy. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe they're on a yacht somewhere.
typically not the case with people that gave up their kids.
This is true, but you never know.
I'm relatively certain mine aren't on a yacht anywhere. And I know who they are.
No, but I know that, you know, my adoptive parents gave me the best possible life. And I wouldn't change that.
Yeah.
You know, that sliding door scenario, I don't know what that other scenario looks like, but I'm very happy with the scenario.
Right.
How did your family, your daughters, your husband feel as this was going on and this was coming in to become a part of your life?
My husband was very encouraging. He's like, hey, you have brothers. You should check this out. My daughters were at this really weird age that I had to basically have the birds and the bees conversation with them because of this, because I had to explain. They were like 8 and 9. I had explained why I had birth parents and
did they know you were adopted at that point?
No, okay. They didn't understand any of that.
Yeah.
So you have to like explain what a biological, like, okay, so this is how this works. And they're like, oh gosh. Oh, but it was, it was a forced conversation.
My kids just had the birds and bees conversation with me. And I was wow, that's really,
I know.
You look like you came through it pretty well.
It was kind of shocking from their perspective.
Was it different than what I had told you? As your spiritual guru?
Very, very, very different.
Finally enlightened. Like,
there was no fifth of anything, and they didn't have to smoke anything. It was like, it was very different than the way you put it.
There's always a different way to do things.
That's right.
Now, I just found that fascinating, and I think it's terrific that you connect with, and that it's so rare that you would have, three brothers
mm-hmm.
from both biological parents. I mean, it's really a unique situation.
And how did your brothers grow up? How did they end up? Are they successful?
They're actually very successful. Yeah.
They didn't end up on that Barstool
they
like
didn't because so when my birth parents separated, my my birth father was a really hardworking guy. He was a bus driver and a basketball coach, and he was gone a lot because he was working. He was like very, you know, hardworking blue collar. So they kind of raised themselves, but he taught them the right rules, and they're all very successful. So
are they impressed at some of the stuff that you've accomplished here since you've been here? That's got to be pretty cool to talk about.
Well, they're still in Minnesota?
Oh, yeah. They're all still there.
So, I mean, like, you're the kid that went off to California.
Yeah. You know, well, even my hometown, too, is kind of looks at that like, wow. You know,
That's the one thing, like, no matter where you leave, if you go to California, it's always that's the thing people talk, well, you know, he left for California.
Yeah, and they're like, oh, wow.
Yeah, but look how successful they became.
Yeah.
They get kind of
he's
defensive,
he's got a podcast
though.
And everything. That's what, right? That's what they say about me.
So tell us about your company. You started your marketing and PR organization.
Yeah. So I did that in 2008 because I just felt like I could do it for myself versus...
In 2008, which is such a great time to be starting a new business.
Yeah, right. There was nothing going on economically.
Nothing going on.
But what I had going for me, the advantage was that, you know, in the Valley, if you work hard out here and you make relationships and you do what you say you're going to do, like coming from Minnesota, I couldn't believe, like, returning someone's phone call. People are like, wow, thanks for returning my call. I'm like, yeah, sure. I mean, that was a bare minimum where I came from in terms of Midwest work ethic.
The Warburton is a client, correct?
Well, I do the work for it, but it's pro bono.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a pro bono client. Yeah.
So tell us about some of your other clients.
Well, I work with the local transit agency, right? Sunline Transit Agency.
Worked with one of our previous guests, the Coachella Valley Scorpions.
Yeah, I did their launch, the media launch of the team before Vince took over. They don't need me anymore. I don't know why. Vince has quite a well-oiled machine
but
for promotion.
But they still need you. I suggest that given it's pickleball, they still will need you.
Yeah, I think so. The only thing I've seen is my bumper sticker.
See? Yeah.
Yeah. So I did stuff like that. I work with, it was Marilyn, very controversial client, but PS Resorts that owns Forever Maryland in Palm Springs. So I got to go through all the fun national press with that. And
is it where it's going to be?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not as good of a location, unfortunately.
No.
But
no, it's not. And they have tall palm trees around her.
Yeah.
It screws up the photos.
There's a lot of people who still can't find her. They go to where she was. Like, we hear people saying, oh, she must have left. And so we're like, we need a whole camera to be like, she's...
Yeah, she just walked out one day. And
yeah, no, she's right there. But like, they see that she's gone and they think she's gone. So, yeah. But it's a great client. PS Resorts, Off-Top, like great, great people.
He's the best.
He is the best. And, you know, the current board, like they're very passionate about, you know, bringing business into Palm Springs, supporting the resorts. I love all the people I work with there. So... hopefully we can stop talking about the Maryland lawsuit and actually just promote the destination, right?
Yes, that would be nice.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, the mall. Malls on my clients.
That thing was, I call it a faux controversy. I mean, I know it was a big controversy because it cost a lot of people a lot of money.
Yeah.
But it was really...
Maryland or the mall?
Maryland.
Okay. The mall is
there's
always...
There's some controversy around the mall.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, I just, you know, it was a small handful, but of influential people who made a big stink, and I think they actually hurt their own cause
at the
end of the day.
They did. It's just unfortunate that they ended up winning and she's not in as good of a location. But at the end of the day, it cost about $1 million, and just between the legal fees and the cost to move her... So at some point, like, they could have been continuing this on the road. They weren't stopping. Trina and her team was not stopping. They apparently had money to burn, and they were going to stick with it. And so at some point, it's like, you got to stop the bleeding, right? It's just, let's just get it over with and move her and be done talking about it.
When you're going up about with somebody that's got too much time on their hands and resources.
Exactly. Yeah. But you're right. It was a very select few. We did surveys and studies. Almost everyone in Palm Springs loves her. The visitors, the residents, they all think she's amazing. Like, it was such a small group of loud people that it was unfortunate, but...
What's coming up for you next? What the same stuff? I mean, I know you're doing the same stuff every year.
Well, yeah. I mean, I would say just doing my thing, and
we need to do remotes wherever
this
Andrea is.
This is a remote.
No,
this
wherever. We need to travel with her.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Well, I never know what's going to be in my path, but I have fallen into a lot of really cool things, I have to say. I've been pretty blessed in my life.
Yeah. Well, we're delighted that you stopped to spend some time with us. Super fun. And I appreciate you. Well, I really appreciate you talking, very openly about the adoption thing.
Sure.
Some people are very willing to talk about it and some people don't want to talk about it, but it's personal to me and I find it interesting to get other people's perspectives.
Well, I appreciate you opening up too. It's interesting to hear where everybody kind of stands on it.
And our biggest goal is that this in no way will damage your future here in the Valley, being a member or being a participant on this podcast.
Oh, I don't think it will. You know, Patty Daly Caruso, she did a whole big story on my brothers and my family following me when she had her show.
Oh.
Yeah, miss her so much.
Yeah,
she was a friend,
she was
and she
phenomenal.
Was always fascinated by the story, and
well,
she did a big show on
it. It's a great story, and I think it is, it's one of those stories that cannot be duplicated.
It's pretty crazy. And the fact, the reason I tell the Facebook part about it, like my friend kind of finding out somebody who knew my brother, is I don't know if I ever would have written back. I'm being fully honest. Like, I was truly like, I don't know if this is something I want. But I kind of got that third-party endorsement, which allowed me to open the door. It might have never happened, honestly.
Will Sharon Stone play you in the movie?
Oh, I hope I can do better than that.
Oh, wow.
No, she's a great actress, but she's not in my age range, okay?
True. Good point.
Plus, she has an issue with, every time she crosses her legs, it's a problem.
It is a problem. That's all anybody ever thinks about anymore, right?
I mean, Sharon Stone, not you, of course.
Thank you for clarifying.
Thank you. Yes, I know. That would be a horrible way to end a podcast. Like, right. Wow, what did Patrick just say about Andrew? That's terrible.
Something about her legs.
What? Thanks for being such a fun guest.
Thank you.
This
Thanks for
really
having me,
fun.
Guys.
Thanks, Andy.
Randy, once again, a phenomenal job in the research department.
Yeah. I had like 4 pages of notes.
You did. That Andrew sent to you. But I'm not going to, I don't want to divulge that secret on the air.
It was nice not to have to do a lot.
John McMullen, thank you very much for your great job producing.
Yes.
Our thanks to the team and staff here at Skip's Little Bar. They always treat us like family because they can't kick us out. And of course, the McCallum Theater, our presenting sponsor. Get ready for another incredible season. And I'm looking forward to talking with Yvonne Bell about what they've got planned for
the future.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
And I am really excited about all the future guests that will be coming as a result of being recommended by Andrea.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, she's going to feed us some guests.
I'm feeding you all kinds of stuff, I promise.
And right. We should have Patrick Warburton back on now that he's out on tour. That would be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yep.
I like what he's doing with his career.
Yeah. It's an interesting
And I'm sure that's
too.
Important to him that I like what he's doing with his career.
Well, he's actually having a ball.
Yeah, I'm sure he's been wondering. Gosh, I hope
Randy's happy with that.
What would Randy do?
WWRD. More people ought to be thinking like that. We're going to start a new hashtag, WWRD.
All right. Thank you for listening to this edition of Big Conversations Little Bar. I'm Patrick Evans for Randy Florence and John McMullen. Remember, you can subscribe and get every episode. Don't miss one. And we're available on every platform where you get your podcasts.
Meet your neighbors, fascinating and grand. Each conversation, a wave on the sand. Raise your glass and join the ride, where stories and dreams fully collide. At Big Conversations Little Bar, brought to you by McCallum, our guiding star. And Randy, tales retold.